PC Hill is not a doctor and does not claim to be a doctor licensed in any type of medical field. Don't be an idiot and use anything heard on the show as medical advice. This information should be used for educational purposes only, and you should contact your doctor for any medical advice. Now get off me. Welcome to Kick It Naturally. I'm Kenna McEnroe, and I'm here with T.C. Hale, author, natural health expert, producer extraordinaire. We also have Will Hottie Patati Schmidt coming to us. We're from the Bay Area. I'm actually really not here, so the show's probably not going to be that great today. This was pre-recorded, so I'm sorry if you have to sit through all this without me.
Thank you, Kenna, even though Kenna is not here at all. Kenna is, do you know what Kenna is? She's pulling a person right out of her.
That's crazy.
Right? That is some crazy stuff. So right now, right when we're recording this podcast, Kenna is in delivery. And she's like, by the time she gets home, there's going to be like another person in her apartment like all the time now.
I feel like she could probably still be on the show if they just give her like a Bluetooth.
Right.
Mic.
Yeah. I think that would probably be our best show ever.
It's kind of a cop-out, I think.
It is. So why don't we just pretend she's here, so every few minutes, if you can scream bloody murder, then we'll, sure. It'll feel like Kenna's with us. Oh, poor thing. Gonna be... That's a tough situation if you have not witnessed it. It's something.
It's exciting, though.
Yeah, it really is. It's gonna be a lot of fun for her, and... we're having so much fun with Jax. Like, he's like, you know, he's like a little person now. He like does stuff, and he like, you know, gives you a fist pump and all these things. It's like, it's so fun.
Cute.
Today, all of our listeners can get a free audiobook from audible.com. Just go to kickitinthenuts.com/audiobook for more details.
Okay, so we got a show today. We're gonna cover some questions that kind of go around kind of joint pain kind of thing. So Recently we did a show where we talked about posture and alignment and how issues with that can cause joint pain. So today we're going to go a little bit more towards the physiology, nutritional sides of things, but we may touch on some posture things too. Can you kind of just give a quick summary of how joint pain can be caused by one or the other or a combination of the issues?
Yeah, totally. So I guess like a really clear example to just kind of show like how people actually experience this in the real world is like, say you had an injury when you were young, like, I don't know, you twisted your ankle or broke your ankle or you broke your elbow or something like that. And then, you know, decades later, you can tell like when a storm is coming because you'll feel it start, that joint will start to ache, right? Yeah. So the storm, you know, it's a change in osmotic pressure and it creates all these little shifts in our biochemistry. And the areas where we already are like kind of susceptible to, whether like the tissue's been compromised in some way, it's just more sensitive to changes than other places in the body. And systemic things like environmental conditions or metabolic conditions that affect the whole body could be felt first in the most sensitive areas. So you'd be like, oh, the inflammation in my knee, like, is it because you hurt it in high school football or is it because of the weather? And it's actually, you know, it's both.
Right. Because so. that pressure that comes on, especially when it's going to rain, it kind of has a pro-anabolic effect for most people. So It's really affecting the whole body. But just that most sensitive area may be all that you feel it in.
Yeah, yeah. And just like when you're, say you have bad posture, say you have like chronic neck tension. So that's, you know, it's annoying. But then like the more tired that you get, the more you feel it, right? Because you just have less energy overall systemically. And then you start to get more intense pain signals along with that shift. So it's again, it can be both. It's like your posture and also your chemistry. So yeah, last episode we talked a lot about body alignment, and I think some people got really good information out of it because I actually got contacted by a few people to do some posture alignment work with them online. So excited about getting that going. And this week, yeah, we want to talk a little bit more about the chemistry side of trying to help with joint pain and things like that,
because the person doesn't have to have a previous injury to have pain in their joints.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Like a lot of people will have systemic arthritis where, you know, all their joints kind of ache, and people can have fibromyalgia also for very much like biochemical reasons. I had that for a long time when I was a posture therapist before I learned about body chemistry. I still had really intense pain in like all my extremities, my hands and feet, and it's because my chemistry was totally off. So yeah, you can have pain for one or the other or both reasons. And
right, and I think our fibromyalgia episode was like three parts. Like we had so much to say about it. We're not going to cover all that again, but you can go to kickitnaturally.com and just search for fibromyalgia and you'll find that three-part episode where we really dig into how specific imbalances can change a lot of factors in those tissues, like the pH of the tissue, where minerals are living as far as inside or outside of the cell, and how those can cause a wide variety of problems that can create pain.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to look at some specific cases here a little bit today and just talk about some specifics from some questions that people emailed in. So we're starting with John, right?
Sure. John in Austin, Texas. My doctor says that one of my knees is very close to bone on bone, and I have no choice but to get a partial knee replacement. The pain is starting to affect my work since I'm on my feet most of the day, but I would love to avoid knee replacement. A friend recently recommended your digestion course for my bloating, and I was able to see improvement very quickly. Now I'm wondering if there are steps I could take to improve my knee pain as well. From my test numbers, I gathered that I appear to be catabolic and electrolyte deficient, but I may be looking at it wrong. My numbers were... do you want me to read off those numbers?
Yeah, let's look at all this stuff.
Okay, so he reported his... So this is from different self-tests that we teach how to do in our various courses, so like the Almost Free Digestive Issues course, the fat loss course, and the health coach training course. We teach how to do these. So if you want to check it out, you can find that at kickitnaturally.com, and you'll learn how to do these tests. So he got these results of his saliva pH being 7.0, his urine pH was at 5.5, and his blood pressure was kind of low. It was around 105 over 69. His pulse was 59. His breath rate was 10, and his breath hold time was 50. And then his last thing he says is, if there are options beyond knee replacement, I would love to look into them.
Okay, great. So first of all, knee replacement, they do have specific surgeries where they kind of replace a joint and put an artificial joint in there. But most knee replacements, they're not actually replacing the knee. They're kind of putting either metal or plastic on the ends of the bones so that where they connect and move and grind together won't hurt so bad if all of that connective tissue, cartilage, all that stuff has been either worn away or deteriorated for one reason or another. So we'll kind of talk about some reasons why that might happen. Maybe we should do that first. Let's look at some possibilities. If someone, because when you have knee pain, you don't really know what's causing it. You can't tell if all the connective tissue is worn down and you're kind of bone on bone rubbing and that's causing the pain, or maybe if it's all calcified in there and that rubbing of the calcification is causing pain. You can't tell unless you get some kind of MRI, X-ray, Superman vision looking in at your knee to know what's going on. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like John, his doctor, has already done this test and says that it looks like the bones the joint is kind of bone on bone. So can we talk a little bit about different ways that cartilage could be gone? I think people usually view it as, oh, he just used his knee too many times.
Yeah,
and
it
wore that
it
down.
He used it up.
Yeah, he used it up. He should have sat still for a few minutes. And that's not how it really happens. So let's talk about some different ways. First of all, let's look at what's likely going on with John, since he gave us some big hints. He says he was bloating, which so we know he wasn't breaking down protein correctly. He looks really catabolic with the saliva pH being much higher than his urine pH, and that pulse is also low, which is another catabolic marker. So let's talk about some ways that this could happen first with a severely catabolic person, and then also for someone who's not digesting protein correctly.
Yeah, it'd be really interesting, too, if he did that urine dipstick test to see if he had protein on his urine.
Right.
And to see what his specific gravity was, because those are other indicators. If you have a really high specific gravity, that's another indication of the catabolic state or protein in your urine.
Do you want to explain what those dipsticks are that you're talking about?
Yeah, you can find them on Amazon. They're usually 11 parameter, sometimes 10 parameter. I mean, they're testing 10 different things. And if you just type in urinalysis dipsticks, like 10 parameter, 11 parameter, you'll see some different ones that come up. And they all measure usually pretty much the same stuff. And some of those markers that you could see for the catabolic state on that test alone would be urine in your pH, or protein in your urine, low urine pH or high urine specific gravity. And those are especially the protein in the urine is a really strong indicator of that catabolic state. So in looking at that, like you can see, like, if the body, what we mean by that really is the body's always either in doing some sort of catabolic activity or repairing itself in an anabolic state, which is, you know, there's lots of aspects of what that means, but essentially catabolic means like tissue breaking down state. So if you're chronically in that state, then you'll have like joint deterioration, and it's not necessarily a bad thing. Like every time you go and work out, that's a catabolic activity where you're kind of breaking muscle tissue down or stressing it in a way, and then the body responds, hopefully, if it has the right nutrition and amount of rest, in an anabolic response where then it builds up stronger tissue.
Right, so both states are appropriate. I mean, we hear all the time that, wow, all our cells are totally replaced in a year. Like, we're a totally new human, and some of them are replaced daily. And this is kind of the function of how that happens at the cellular level. Every day, during the day, tissues break down so that at night they can be rebuilt into new, stronger tissues. So these states are not wrong, but if someone gets stuck in this breakdown state all the time, which is very common, or at least most of the time they're stuck in this state, that's when the problems occur. So continue kind of explaining that.
Yeah, so when we look at like his issues with bone on bone knee pain, there are things like systemic things that can be really severely debilitating, like if you have a degenerative disc disease in your spine and all your discs are just collapsing. Like, I had that happen to an uncle, and he lost like 6 to 8 inches of height. It was really severe and intense. And
I'd be so mad about that.
Oh my God, it'd be so annoying.
Yeah.
But it's really, really, you know, debilitating. And that, I would say, like, that is something definitely systemically, whether it's a biochemical imbalance or a gene that's a problem, as opposed to something like a knee pain or like a torn meniscus or like rotator cuff, like being worn down, when it's just kind of one spot like that, or even if it's both knees, but not necessarily a whole systemic breakdown, it's oftentimes related to alignment, like body alignment, movement patterns. And the way I think I explained it like this in the last time we talked about alignment was like alignment on a car. So if your tires are on your car correctly, they'll all wear down at an even rate. And if your like axle's off and the wheel is kind of like more up on one angle, so there's more pressure on, say, like the outside or the inside of the tire, that part with more pressure will wear down quicker because it's being used in a way that really places an inordinate amount of stress on one aspect of the material. And that can happen to our knees, it can happen to a disc in our spine, it can happen to like a part of joint of the shoulder, anywhere there's articulation. So that that's probably a major factor in what's going on in John's case. And it's also you need to have the nutrition in place in order to rebuild it. But you also need to address specifically what is causing that inordinate amount of stress on the joints.
Right. So if one knee is much worse, then there's probably an alignment factor that's a contributing factor in there that mm-hmm. might make one worse than the other. But when we look at this catabolic state, if you think about what's going on, you know, all those connective tissues, they all get broken down and rebuilt just like any other tissue, just like skin tissue or, you know, any other organ tissue, anything else in the body. And if the body is always in this breakdown state and this rebuild state never really occurs or occurs very frequently, then you can see how it would seem like, oh, his knee wore out, like he used it too much, and that would be the assumption. But the reality is that he's using it just as much as, you know, most other people, or less than a lot of marathon runners and such. But if it's not rebuilding, then obviously it's not going to last as long. So we find that if someone can move out of this catabolic state and at night push the body into an anabolic state so that it's rebuilding properly, that a lot of issues like this can improve. So that's one issue to look at. And we teach people how to look at these numbers and figure out if you're leaning one direction or another, and then nutritional and supplemental changes that you can make that might help push you into a more anabolic state. Do you want to talk about maybe some food choices or supplement choices that a person could sometimes use to push themselves more anabolic? And before you do that, Will, I just want to say that doesn't mean that you should eat these foods or use these supplements to fix knee pain. That's right. Not what we're saying, because there's a lot of different types of knee pain that can be caused by a person being stuck in the anabolic state all the time. Mm-hmm. So it's important to look at where you are first. But let's say that John knows that he's catabolic. What are some steps he could take to help push his body more anabolic?
Yeah, well, he was on the right track in starting off with the digestive issues that he's got, because that is fundamental before any of the nutrition's actually going to do him any good, is he has to have his digestion working well. So that digestive issues course at kickitnaturally.com is a really helpful place to start. And once that is intact and he's able to like properly metabolize proteins and carbs and fat, then there's some really helpful nutrients to emphasize, such as collagen protein, which you can get from like bone broth or just directly from a supplement. Vitamin E is also very helpful as pro-anabolic, and I like to just supporting general cellular metabolism with B vitamins and vitamin C for repairing tissues as well. It's also glutamine is a particularly anabolic amino acid supplement, and leucine is also used frequently to help build tissue, specifically muscle, but in general, like, it'll help with protein synthesis. So those are a couple like go-to supplements that I've seen help people in catabolic states.
Right. Some foods that can be really helpful too are things like butter and coconut oil. That's a saturated fats like that. And a really good food is eggs with the yolk still runny. So the yolk is not cooked hard, like poached egg or over easy egg where it's still runny, soft boiled egg. When the yolk is runny like that, it seems to have a very pro-anabolic effect, mm-hmm. especially if you can eat those at night.
Mm-hmm.
So there are steps that you can do to help move your body in a more anabolic state, but when there's digestive issues, one reason you might be in that catabolic state because you might not be getting the nutrients that you need, and your body's kind of shopping at from your tissues. So if it's not getting the nutrition it needs from the food coming in because you can't break it down correctly, it'll start stealing from other places, right, Will?
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk about that?
Yeah. So I've seen so many times people come in and they tell me what they're eating, and they have plenty of protein in their diet, like they're eating meats, they have eggs, they maybe even take a protein shake. And when we look at their chemistry, we see they're still nitrogen deficient, which means they're not getting the protein that they're consuming. So it's really a fundamental step to make sure that is really happening. And it usually has to do with the strength of their stomach acid. Like that's a big key, because without your stomach having sufficient acid levels, then pepsin won't be able to do its job as an enzyme breaks down protein. So it's just really kind of fundamental to start with getting that part on track. And we talk about how to do that in a safe way, using things like supplemental hydrochloric acid or D-limonene to help kill bacteria that might be neutralizing your stomach acid. And those are pretty effective in a lot of cases.
Right, we won't go too much into that, but we teach that in pretty much every one of our books and all of our courses, and even that. The almost free course is 50 cents. It's basically a free course, but our system makes people input a credit card to make sure that we're not getting spam registration. So that was the lowest mm-hmm. price we could put it. But we teach all that stuff in there. And, you know, think about what your body is doing when it's rebuilding tissues. In order to rebuild, not only does it have to be in the state where it's in a rebuilding state, but it needs to have the materials that would rebuild that new tissue. Like if you're going to build a house, you can't build it out of nothing. You need bricks or wood or or whatever you're going to build the house out of, you need materials. So if you can't break protein down into amino acids, you don't have any of the building blocks that are necessary to create these new tissues. So even if John wasn't stuck in a catabolic state, which he just appears to be just from these numbers, but that doesn't mean that he definitely is. But even if he wasn't in that situation, if he's bloating, that's a strong sign that he's not breaking down protein correctly, because it's a sign that the stomach is not acidic enough.
Mm-hmm.
So if he's not breaking that down, he's not getting the building blocks to rebuild those connective tissues and to keep that from continually deteriorating.
Yeah. And you know what? Also, like, I think in his case too, like, we see his low blood pressure, that sometimes people feel like they need to avoid sugar or carbohydrates for whatever reason, like they think it causes inflammation or like it feeds all these bacteria. And I think in his case, with his blood pressure being lower, it is important to include healthy carbohydrates, like either whether it's starches that are kind of easier to digest or fruits, just to help give his body the blood sugar that it needs and the carbohydrates that it needs, which have a protein sparing effect, which is if your body has glucose to use for fuel for your regular bodily functions like muscle contraction and that sort of thing, then it won't necessarily have to resort towards gluconeogenesis, which is the breakdown of protein to generate glucose. So we'll see people in that metabolic pathway when they're on something like a ketogenic diet and they're not getting carbs in their diet because they're purposely restricting it, that can accelerate, or that can kind of push someone harder into a catabolic state, which is not what you want if you're trying to rebuild and heal.
Right. And it's just important to make sure that you understand, like when Will was talking about healthy carbs, that doesn't mean pound cake. You know, it means not only good sources of real food carbs, but you also want to try and focus more on ones that are not going to cause a spike and crash in blood sugar for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Like a potato might cause a stronger spike and crash than a sweet potato or a yam would. So if someone's sensitive like that, they'll do better by having these medium carb type foods that we talk about a lot, like berries and butternut squash and sweet potatoes and things like that, as opposed to a pasta bread type thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, also like fruits and maybe other grains that you might find that are particularly easy for you to digest, which you have to really pay attention to, and has a lot to do with your own flora of what grains and things could work for you. Like quinoa is usually an easier to digest one than other ones that are like higher in gluten. And sometimes people do well with buckwheat, which is also a gluten-free grain. But you have to pay attention to see like what ones sit well in your digestion, don't cause bloating, but do give you energy and do give you more stable blood sugar and blood pressure. Also, in his chemistry, his breath rate's pretty slow. It's around 10, which typically is the case in someone who is not really effectively using carbohydrates for energy, because when you are using carbohydrates effectively, you will create more energy and more carbon dioxide in the process of that carbohydrate metabolism, and your breath rate will naturally be faster, like closer to around like 16 breaths per minute, as opposed to where he's at, which is around 10. And that can help a lot with inflammation, because when your body is making sufficient energy, like ATP, from the utilization of carbs, then that will help reduce inflammation. And it's, if you think about it, like say you're doing a workout and you do say a set of squats or something, and you're burning up all the sugar in your legs and driving a lot of blood to them, those muscles get swollen, not only from the increased blood flow, but also from the fatigue. As the cells themselves lose ATP, the water in the cells gets disorganized. So we'll see think of an older woman who has a lot of like just swollen kind of tissues, like her face is puffy or her hands are kind of puffy, or that can happen.
Are you thinking about a specific older woman right now?
Not really. Yeah, but that sort of edema, that imbalanced water, that unstructured bulk water, is largely due to the cells not having enough ATP to organize the water. And we had Dr. Gerald Pollack on before, who talked about all, he's like the wizard of water.
The wizard of water.
He's incredible. Incredible. And he hasn't discovered, obviously, because it's been, there are other really epic, great biochemists that came before him, like Gilbert Ling. And my other favorite, like Ray Peet, talks a lot about this. But when the cells have the energy that they need to do their daily functions, then they're able to organize the water in the tissues. And that's actually like how MRIs and NRIs work. They look at like disorganized water can help show like when there's injuries or even when there are tumors are present. So when our cells have enough energy, they're able to organize this water and things don't get swollen or inflamed. So when we look at things like arthritis, we want to look at energy production overall. Can our cells make enough energy to organize the water properly?
Right.
So there's one other little tangent that might be really, really helpful because John was looking for alternatives to knee replacements that are sort of newer and exciting in the field of holistic or functional medicine. One thing that I would recommend checking out is if anyone in his area does PRP therapy or prolotherapy or injections of meniscal stem cells. There's a doctor that I actually intern with here in the Bay who does prolotherapy, and she also does stem cell therapy. And they'll inject they'll get stem cells from your own adipose tissue, like your own fat, and they'll also use your own blood that they'll spin in PRP therapy, which is platelet-rich plasma therapy. So they'll inject either one of those, or like sometimes a series of both, into an injured joint, and it re-stimulates your body's own healing processes to rebuild the tissue and strengthen the joint. And it saved me about a decade ago with my ankle. It was dislocating constantly, maybe 4 or 5 times a day due to an injury that I had from basketball. And after one treatment, it never dislocated again. And that was before she even started working with stem cell stuff. And now, like, that field is making it possible to regenerate tissue. So you can read more about it if you go to prolotherapy.com. That's Dr. Donna Alderman's website. And she could, if you're in California, she could potentially treat you if you're a good fit. And if not, she could probably link you to a physician that does it near you in Austin.
That had to be annoying for your ankle to become disjointed. I mean, your shoes don't even come untied 4 times a day. So
yeah, it was really. I'd be sitting like on a bus, and we'd hit a little bump, and my ankle would dislocate. It's pretty horrific.
And you'd yell at the driver, "Pay attention! Where are you going?"
Oh my god, it was awful. But yeah, it really saved me. It's an amazing treatment, and it has a lot of potential. So if you're looking to, you know, see what else could possibly work instead of a knee replacement, that is a very good potential option.
You know, and when you're looking at fixing the major causes of these issues, because you want to fix them, you don't want to do some therapy that's going to improve things, but then you get right back to where you are because you didn't fix what was causing the problem. While you're doing the things like fixing your digestion so you can break down amino acids, it sounds like you're already on your way there. If you're working to push yourself more anabolic, you can also cheat a little bit by doing some of these supplements like the collagen or doing bone broth so that you get all of those little cofactors and amino acids that are harder to get from other foods and make them available to your body so there's something there to rebuild once you can get yourself in that rebuilding state or start doing some type of therapy that's going to help. So that's a good way to cheat, is by fixing digestion and doing things like bone broth that can help you get a lot of those nutrients that are harder to access.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go on to Christina.
Cool. She says, "I am on 2 medications for arthritis, a popular NSAID and a PPI. I am taking the PPI to protect my stomach from damage caused by the NSAID. I am sure I have low stomach acid, but am worried about taking the HCL treatment. Suggestions?"
So an NSAID, as a lot of people call them, is just a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug, and they're very popular, but if you Google it, you're gonna find like they cause a lot of problems, and it seems that, like, you'll see like GI bleeding and ulcers, and it seems that they have the ability to damage the mucosal barrier in that stomach, and once that's damaged, and it seems like they suppress all the prostaglandin synthesis in there, and they reduce the amount of blood that can flow to that layer, and it seems like there's a lot of problems that it can cause. But when you get rid of that mucus barrier, all of a sudden problems can arise. So what they're doing now, it's very popular, is they put people that are on these NSAIDs on a PPI to just turn the stomach acid off. Because if you're taking something that basically caused like an open sore in your stomach, every time you eat and create stomach acid, that open sore is going to feel like lemon juice on a cut. That's not going to be a good time. So they're like, okay, we'll fix that by just turning off stomach acid altogether. Yay, we fixed it. That's not always so good. So, and I think aspirin is the only non-steroidal anti-inflammatory thing that's considered a drug that does not cause these problems. So that could be one thing. I know, Will, you're a big fan of aspirin from some of the Ray Peet stuff. But, you know, we'll talk about some other things that Christina could look into. But, you know, maybe if you have the ability to use just aspirin instead of something that's so powerful that's going to be problematic, then maybe that can be one thing to consider.
Yeah, and it may also sound, or it's definitely debatable and sounds surprising to people probably to hear you say aspirin doesn't cause stomach damage, because there's a lot of reports saying that it does. If you go to repeat.com and type in the search box aspirin, he has a really interesting article that sort of kind of defends the efficacy of aspirin and also kind of explains what trials that they sort of studies that they use to try to evidence that aspirin does cause damage. So I would say, like, if you're like kind of confused or conflicted about that idea, I would just say go ahead and read his article. It's called Aspirin, Brain, and Cancer, and just kind of think for yourself, because just because a medical study says one thing or another, it doesn't necessarily mean it's true. You have to look into why that was written, who wrote it, what was going on in the medical industry at the time to motivate that research to happen in the first place. And it can be confusing. So I would check out that article, and probably, yeah, like you said, most likely aspirin is a much safer drug with other benefits to it than some of the other NSAIDs out there.
Right. So, and what the drug that Christina listed, the drug that she was taking, but I took that out and just said the NSAID because I don't want to bash a company and get yelled at or something. But it was a very popular drug that's most commonly used with osteoarthritis situations. And it appears that most osteoarthritis situations are more common in an extremely anabolic state, and that arthritis is often caused by calcification issues that state can create by the body pulling too much calcium out of the tissues and it floating around and then it getting deposited in joints in the wrong place. Will, you're very clicky. Why are you so clicky? Oh.
Sorry, no, I was looking through that article that I was just mentioning the points about it.
And so this, it appears that what she's doing is she has an issue that I'm not saying it is, but it just sounds like it could be an osteoarthritis calcification issue. And if you're using a PPI to help the drug that's supposed to help that issue, you've turned off your ability to break down protein. So when a person can't process protein, they tend to gravitate more towards carbohydrates because those are easier to digest without stomach acid. So when a person is gravitating towards more carbs, what we find is that calcium follows sugar. So when you increase the amount of carbohydrates and sugars that you're consuming, you're pulling more calcium out of the tissues. It's floating around the bloodstream and then dropping and getting deposited into joints more. So by using a PPI, you could literally magnify osteoarthritis issues by creating more calcification problems. Do you want to add on to that, Will?
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to what we were saying before about with John's case of if he's not able to break down these nutrients, his body's not going to have the nutrition to rebuild itself, even if he is eating all of the right things. So we know for sure that, you know, if you're going to take a PPI, it's going to block your ability to create that stomach acid, and that is going to prevent you from really being able to rebuild any issues and correct the ultimate reason why you have the arthritis in the first place. So it's not really like a sustainable solution to just be on these meds that are they're not really fixing the true issue at hand.
Right, and they're kind of magnifying the underlying cause to make it worse, if that is the cause of your arthritis. Now, she's asking, you know, I know I don't have stomach acid, but with this NSAID, I can't really do the HCL treatment, right? And I kind of agree, because I wouldn't want to put acid in somebody that if they felt like they had open wounds that were caused by some drug. So, of course, we can't tell you what to do against your doctor's advice, but if it were me, I think that I would look into ways that I could improve the arthritis issue naturally, which means that I would have to look at my own chemistry to try and get an idea of what's causing that arthritis. And we have a joint pain episode too that might give a little more details into figuring out what kind of joint arthritis do I have and what's causing it. But if you can figure out the cause, and am I leaning too catabolic like John, or am I leaning too anabolic, and do I have calcification issues? Is my urine pH always really high because my body's trying to pee out as much calcium as possible? And if it's really high, that's a strong indication that you're creating calcification issues and that you can take steps to fix that. So if you can take steps to improve the underlying cause of the arthritis and reduce your need for that drug, then you wouldn't have to take a drug that turns off your digestion just to allow you to take that other drug type of thing. If you're looking more at the cause instead of just using a drug to cover up a symptom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really not getting to the bottom of it to go that route. Mm-hmm. And it's,
your body did not have an NSAID deficiency. That's not, so you know that an NSAID is not fixing the actual underlying cause.
Yeah, and I understand the desire to alleviate the symptom, because it can be really stressful to be in constant pain, and sometimes
it can affect
drugs,
some people's work, you know, their ability to make money. It's a real thing.
Yeah, like maybe you can't type and you have to type, or something, or you can't sit and you need to sit. So it's not like a light thing. So I don't want to just be dismissive of that strategy, because sometimes you got to do what you got to do. But if you can, work to, you don't have to necessarily take the strategy that they're saying and not do anything else in addition to that, whether it's like taking other supplements or other dietary changes or working on your body alignment and your posture, because that could also be a factor in what's going on, even if you have a biochemical thing causing a systemic arthritis, which we're not sure about in her case. Like, it could be a posture related thing.
Right.
There's a lot of other things that you can do even in the midst of what she is doing. There's also the potential of, like when you take a PPI, that blocks your own production of stomach acid, but it can still be effective to, when you do eat protein, to take hydrochloric acid at that time. And that can help you digest the food that you consume, which obviously is important. And then the rest of the time that your stomach is there, if you're taking the PPI, it'll have a lower acid content. So it'll have like a more neutral pH. But you could just take HCL at those times when you're consuming a protein. And that could be one strategy if you're really committed to being on a PPI.
Right. And, if you have an open wound in there, it's still going to be painful and you'll know it, and you'll know not to continue doing that at all. But another thing, just to clarify what we're saying here, is that we don't ever suggest somebody just stop taking a medication that is helping them survive or function or whatever. But while you're still doing that, you can still start looking at your chemistry and taking steps to improve situations, mm-hmm. so that you remove your need for that drug. It's not like just stopping a drug because you found out it's not fixing the underlying cause. It still may be allowing you to function, or with some drugs, it's allowing the person to survive. So it's important not to just stop that without your doctor's help, but that doesn't mean that you can't take steps to actually work on the real underlying cause, or to at least figure out what it is in your case so that you know which direction to move.
Sure. Also, in her case, she just started taking the PPI to protect her stomach, but she didn't necessarily say that she had an ulcer. Right. She kind of preemptively, it seems like, from what the way she phrased it, it's preemptively taking a PPI because she knows, like, oh, the NSAID's going to damage my stomach.
Well, it's so common now that it causes damage that a lot of doctors are just giving them the PPI as soon as they prescribe it. Like, one of the conditions is called NSAID-induced ulcers. Like, that's... Mm-hmm. So they know that it's doing this, so a lot of them are just prescribing it right away. So you're right. She may not have any ulcers, and she may be fine using HCL with meals, even though she is taking a PPI. But you don't know, so you'd want to be cautious about that. But it doesn't mean that you're stuck and you can't do anything. You can still work on the underlying problems and fix it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So I think we covered things.
Yeah, I would just reiterate to John, really check out the prolotherapy.com that I mentioned, because that could be a really powerful, useful tool. And do all the other right things also. Work on your alignment, work on your digestion, eat in a way that supports your chemistry, and you can learn how to do that through that Almost Free Digestive Issues course at kickitnaturally.com. And then in our fat loss course, also the same website, there is a rather significant alignment-based exercise program that can help people correct postural imbalances and just work on their fitness too once they get aligned.
Right, and we're going to start working on a pain relief course as well that'll have a lot more videos of Will showing how to do that. So hopefully that'll get finished up next year. And also, if you know, some conditions are a little more advanced than what we teach in that free digestion course. So if you find that you need to dig deeper, then go to healthprocourse.com and you can check out our advanced course for health coaches. We have a lot of people that take it to improve their own health or their family's health too. So that's always an option if you find that you need to get into more advanced stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So that's it. We'll see you next week, and we will hopefully have some reports of what kind of human Kenna made. I hope he's not a jerk. I hope he's cute. Yeah.
Exciting.
All right. See you next week, guys.